Death Watch.
Welcome to the Nameless Horror Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition Investigation by Deathwatch Productions. Our investigators are in the small eastern Pennsylvania town of Stowell, each for their own reason, and that is where we will rejoin them. First, let's introduce our investigators, starting with Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm playing Oscar Herman, and I'm about to drop my good friend Robbie off for a little play date. Isn't it so cute? Going to spend time with his girlfriend.
I'm Travis. I'm playing Rob. That's Rob Rumble Wolf, former heavyweight champion of Missouri. I was thinking about those guys that shot up the place, and I just assumed gangster. Is that what my takeaway would be as Rob?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what you'd think. I mean, they were dressed like it, and you've heard the news stories about the public enemies and whatnot, so...
Well, I can't seem to get away from them. Don't even know how I got mixed up with them. But yeah, I'm going to have a play date with my girlfriend.
And I'm John playing Tony Ray Spates. I think I probably need some medical attention due to a cleaver into the shoulder. But instead, I'm going to go and supervise this play date with Robbie's girlfriend.
Okay, so actually, last session, after you had given your report to Deputy Foley... some men showed up outside the restaurant and hosed the place down with lead. And Rob had decided after you guys fled that place that you wanted to go speak with Marion Ellis, who is a woman who's shown some interest in you while you were living at Petunia Brizendine's house. And she's the neighbor there. You had actually said that you wanted to talk with her to see if you could get a sense of whether she's in on all the oddness that's taking place here. And Oscar and Tony were going to just drive around after dropping him off to see if you saw anything, is what you said.
Yeah, like go deputy hunting if we're lucky.
Yeah, so you had got to her house.
I would say we should do a once around the block just to make sure nobody's watching the place, or watching Petunia's more accurately. Is waiting on our return.
All right.
Yeah. So you'd reach her house and drop Rob off, and it's probably about 8 o'clock in the evening, so it's dark outside, but there were still lights coming from the house. And as the session had ended after you'd knocked and she'd opened the door, Rob. So that's where we'll pick it back up. So Tony and Oscar, now who's driving?
Me.
All right. So Oscar's driving, and Tony, you're in the passenger seat with a injured shoulder, and you guys take off, drive around the block or whatever you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Rob, the door opens and, Marion stands there with the light from the living room spilling over her, and she sees you and she smiles, but you can see that she's a little surprised to see you there.
Hey, pardon me, Miss Ellis. I didn't mean to call so late. I hope that's okay.
What's going on? Is everything okay?
Oh, I just, you know, I invited you to come to Mother Baker's for dinner, you know, the other night. I want to say, like, maybe that's not on the table anymore. And I just wanted to check and see how you and the little one were doing.
Yeah, well, we've finished dinner, but I can fix something up for you.
Oh, no, I'm fine as far as that goes. I just wanted to see how you were all doing, and I had a question for you. It might seem kind of funny, but if you don't mind, this is a boxer's subtlety.
Please, come in then.
Oh, are you sure that's okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, people can spread whatever rumors they will.
Well, I don't mean to take up much of your night, but I just heard something funny since I've been in town the last couple of days. heard a few people saying it. Does the great eye or the great mind mean anything to you? And I'll look at her sharply.
Okay. So she leads you into the living room there, and she indicates a chair that's in front of a coffee table for you to sit down there and then do your psychology when you mention this.
Extreme success.
Okay. So she indicates that chair, and then you ask her that, and you can tell immediately that she, like she tries to cover it up, but, you know, she tries to recover, but she definitely understood exactly what you're talking about, and it's something that frightens her. But she tries, you know, she recovers pretty quick, and she's like, let me get you, would you like some coffee? I think I have some coffee still.
Oh, please.
And then, so then she leaves you there and goes into the kitchen. You can hear her clattering around in there.
Slide on the brass knuckles. No, not really. Is the kid around? I forget her name. Sorry, it's been a minute.
Rosemary.
Rosemary.
So, I mean, she's not down there.
Oh, okay.
But it is 8.
Right. Could be bedtime.
Yeah. So roll a spot hidden.
Grenade in the coffee cup.
Got a hard success.
Okay. So you're sitting in this living room and, you know, you're sitting in this chair and there's the coffee table in front of it. And beyond that, there's the fireplace that's got a low burning fire in it right now. And to your left is the kitchen, but also there is the hallway that you know would lead to other parts of the house and the stairwell that would go upstairs at this house. And even though it's dark in that hallway, you do spot little blonde pigtails peeking out around the corner.
Right.
It's, Rosemary Alice is like peeking around at you.
Well, I'll look at that spot and wink at her, but otherwise I won't say anything.
Yeah. So she smiles and she comes out.
Okay.
To talk to you. And she calls you Mr. Rob, you know. What are you doing here, Mr. Rob?
Oh, I just wanted to talk to your mom. Are you supposed to be up, or you're not going to get in trouble, are you?
She shakes her head. No.
Yeah, I was just worried about you two. Is everything okay?
So that's what Rosemary Ellis looks like. You should see picture there. Do you?
I do.
Okay, yeah, so that's what she looks like. And she's like got a teddy bear in her arms. And so, like all kids, you know, they're forbidden from the creator to hold still at any given time. So she's like, you know, bouncing from foot to foot and leaning over one of the other chairs and like popping back up. And she's running around the living room or whatever, talking to you. But she's like, yeah, we're fine. Why do you ask? Have you seen Mrs. Brizendine? We haven't seen her in a while. And my mom won't tell me what happened to her.
No, I'm afraid not, kid.
I think she died, she says, with all seriousness. Like, with the seriousness that only an 8-year-old kid can attain. I think she died.
Yeah, maybe she did. That happens sometimes. Got to be ready for it, but...
Every time you enter the ring.
Okay, so it's while, you know, she's talking to you that the door swings open and Marion comes in and she's got a tray with some stuff on it. So we'll bounce over real quickly to Tony and Oscar. You're driving around. Which way did you want to go?
I figure we're just gonna, like, after dropping Rob off, just kind of go forward, hang a left, and then I'll probably do a figure eight around the two blocks, right?
Okay.
Circle the one block and then kind of take the other.
Yeah.
And if Robbie ain't out by that point, maybe just start cruising, making our way towards the church.
Okay.
Set up over there, stake it out anyway.
So when you pull away from Marion and the Brizendine boarding house, then you'll take a left and then another left. And this takes you behind the block that has Marion's house. Also, it takes you to the back of the block that has the auto shop that Rob works at. And past that field where he told you he had found the dead
dog,
right?
Yeah.
Past that field. And then once you drive down that way, you would take a right. That would take you alongside the auto shop that he works at and bring you to that intersection of Randolph Street that leads out of town, the only busy street. And then across that was where you guys had followed the truck, the Jensen truck, as he was going along that. So turning, you know, doing your figure eight, turning right down Randolph Street, passing by that auto shop and the gas station, that also takes you by that house where the weird little girls were also, it takes you to the intersection where you had seen an old man way up on a telephone wire, you know, listening to people's calls or whatever. You don't see him out there now, but let's have both of you do a spot hidden while we're out driving around here.
Son of a...
Okay. So, fail. You know, Stoll's a small town and it's dark, so you don't really see anybody out and about as you're driving around. All the businesses are pretty much closed. You can see lights from all the houses, people that are still awake, but nobody outside doing anything.
All right.
You know, so then you would take another right turn and start heading your way back towards Mary and Alice's house there.
Yeah. I'll just kind of slow down when we get out front there, see if Rob's out yet, then start the other part of the 8.
Okay.
And if he ain't out by that point, time to start heading off towards the church.
Okay. So yeah, you're doing that and you guys aren't seeing anybody out and about. Now, Rob, Marion comes back in and she's got a tray and she's got some coffee and she's like, "What are you doing up, young lady? You get to bed right this instant." And, you know, Marion gives a crestfallen look, but then, you know, she bounces off and bounces up the stairs. And Marion sets this tray down on the coffee table and she sits down in the other chair and she's like, here's the coffee. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you very much. So yeah, I don't mean to drop by, you know, late at night, just asking an oddball question out of the blue. Just a lot of people in town have been mentioning this, and you know, there are those who are afraid, and there are ones who are even a little weirder. So I was just wondering if maybe you'd heard anything about it.
Yeah, so you can tell that she's apprehensive, but she sort of leans closer, and even though you're in her house, she's almost whispering, but she's like, "Yeah, there's something very strange that's been happening in town. And I've noticed it for a couple of weeks now. People have been acting very strange. Some people have even just up and disappeared. And there's a lot of things that have been happening that just can't be explained. Like what happened next door. I mean, that's not a thing that happens here."
And that's the sort of thing that makes you afraid to talk about it then?
Yeah. You know, some of us have noticed, other people in town have noticed, but when we try to talk to people, we get very hostile reactions from people. And I've noticed that a lot of people have changed, like perfectly normal people, and suddenly it's like they're slow. It's like they're simple, if you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean.
You know, I shouldn't lay this all on you. I mean, it's not your town and it's not your problem, but I'm starting to fear for, and then she stops and she looks towards like the hallway and you can see her cock her head to listen. And then she's like, "Marianne, you get upstairs right this instant." And then you hear the, you know, pitter patter of feet on wooden steps, but she looks back to you and she's, "I'm starting to fear for Marianne, even, because there's a couple of girls, a set of twins."
Oh, yeah, I think I heard about them.
That, Rosemary. I'm starting to fear for Rosemary. So there's a couple of girls that are in her class, and they've been acting very strange, and people are saying very strange things about them. Like the sort of things you don't say about people, like that, you know, that animals have disappeared, and that, people haven't seen their father in a while. And I've even heard rumors that people have heard screams.
From where they live?
Coming from their house.
What else odd have you heard about?
Well, there's a lot of things that you'll notice if you live in a town as long as I've lived here. Like, you know, the incident with the foreclosure next door has been happening all over town. Like the man who owns the bank, he's my whole life. He's been known as a kind man who will do everything he possibly can to help people when they fall behind on their payments. A couple of weeks ago, it's like something changed, and now he'll take any excuse he can find to kick people out. And then, you know, and then people get moved in, you know, people that are close with him, friendly with him, but not just him. It seems to all be centered around that professor. Like people go to his house and they come back different.
Yeah, I heard something about that too. What about this church or the minister at the Methodist church? You hear anything odd about him?
Yeah, he's changed. That's why I don't go to that church anymore. Mm-hmm. He started talking, he started giving weird sermons. Like, you know, I've read the Bible and he's given sermons that are in some cases the direct opposite of the meaning we're supposed to take. He started talking a lot about, you know, how slavery is actually a good thing and it's actually a duty for those of us who are of a higher intelligence. And I couldn't keep going listening to that. So something's changed around town. Something's happening to people. Something's happening to people because they're acting, you know, they're acting different. Some of these people I've known my whole life. And then suddenly, you know, some of them have turned violent out of the blue. Some of them, you know, they go from being a smart person to not being able to tie their shoes.
Yeah, I think
some of them go from not being able to tie their shoes to talking about things that I can't even comprehend. You know, mathematical formulas and movement of star. Like, what is that? I don't. So I'm not. Something weird is happening in town. So do a listen.
Regular success.
And then Tony and Oscar do a spot hidden.
Barely. Good one. So I'm going to do a drive-by on Miriam's house.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's while you're doing this drive-by, you can see that they're, you know, Rob's still in, he's not out on the porch yet. And Oscar, you're driving and you just happen to notice that there is a car parked alongside the street further down that wasn't there last time he made this circuit. There's no lights on in it or anything. It's just parked there. You don't see any people, but there is a car there that wasn't there. And that's at, it's actually not technically on the street. It's actually in the recreation ground, quite a ways down. And, Tony, you see, you just happen to be looking right at the perfect place as you guys drive by this house and you see multiple shadows darting through the back of Mary and Ellis's yard towards the house. And then Rob, you hear, they're trying to be quiet and it's only a miracle that you can hear it in a house this size, but from back somewhere beyond the kitchen, you hear the sound of a rattling doorknob.
Yeah, well, I'll shush Mrs. Ellis, and I'll stand bolt upright, and I'll be like, Miss Ellis, you go to your daughter right now, okay? And you stay right with her.
You're gonna have to use a skill on her. So you got
brawl.
No, I'm gonna
persuade.
It should be intimidating. She should be fearful of my sudden change of mood. And does that work for you, Brandon?
Yep.
I'll spend the luck. 7.
Okay. Yeah. So she. She jumps right to her feet and steps back from you, and her eyes are wide. You know, she's like reaching her hands up to hold you at bay. And then, you know, that lasts for a second before it clicks in her mind that it's not necessarily you that she should be afraid, but that she should be afraid in general. And so she nods and darts towards that hallway, towards the steps. As she reaches the steps, it's like a loud bang as the door goes off its hinges back there. Like someone kicks it in. You can hear breaking glass.
Yeah, I'll be trying to move with her, but my eye on where I was hearing the sound, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's back through the kitchen.
Okay.
So, Tony, what do you do?
So, I'm going to, how far away are we from the house? Are we like driving right by it at that point?
Yeah, you see this when you're parallel to the house next door that had been foreclosed is when you see this.
Mm. Okay, so
you're like right at her house, basically.
So I'm going to call out, Oscar, stop. Looks like there's, how many people did I see? 3, you said?
You saw at least 2 shadows darting across the dark yard there. Lit by.
Okay, looks like Robbie's going to have company. He's probably going to need help.
Yeah, I'll stop
and
the car.
And I'll make ready to hop out as soon as he stops.
And like, I figure I'm cop cruising at this point in the figure eight, just taking.
Yeah.
So you could probably hop out, no problem. Mm-hmm. I'm not going fast. But yeah, I'll stop the car, put on any emergency brake. I don't even know if cars have them at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just leave it idling.
Okay.
And draw my gun and start heading where Robbie pointed.
Okay.
Yeah. I think once I get close, I'll start trying to be sneaky. And so I'll do it at what a penalty die because I won't try moving slow.
Well, the timing of it is that by the time you guys get up to the house, you can already hear like the sound of breaking glass from the door in the back being kicked in.
Okay. Guess I'll try the front door.
Okay.
I'm going to continue around to the back and take them from the rears.
Okay. So, Rob, you head towards that kitchen. It's got a swinging door. Then you swing it open and you can see that there's three masked or hooded men filing into the kitchen now from that back door up the back steps. There's still a light on in the kitchen.
Yeah. Well, I'll slip one hand and get those brass knuckles on and I'll say like, you're in the wrong house.
You get an achievement if you can drop all three of them before we get there.
I'm going to try.
All right. So you see, hang on, let me get this up here.
No, if I'll be able to, it gets a little tricky defending against that many. Got a good dodge though. So.
I don't. I have to rely on brawl. Do they have options for full defensive in this system?
What would...
You give up your attack, and I think you get a free dodge, essentially, a turn. Not free, but it doesn't. It's not affected
They don't... Yeah, I think the way... I'm trying to think if there's anything like that for Call of Cthulhu. I don't know. Nothing's coming to the top of my head.
Mm.
The only thing I can remember is that if you get up to where you're able to attack twice in a round, then you can defend that many times before they start getting bonuses too.
I think that's about right. Essentially, you're giving up your attack for another dodge or a parry.
Yeah, and I mean, that's how dodging bullets work. I mean, to the degree that you can dodge them, that's how it works. As you say, like, I'm going to hit the deck and you give up your next action, give them a penalty on their attack roll.
All right.
So I imagine it'd be easy to extrapolate that over to melee.
Okay, so Oscar's going to the front door, and Tony's going around the back. Let me get this set up here. Where is that?
I was just looking at those grappling rules. I was liking what they had in that. Or like if, because they were doing hit location for it too, so if you're grappling like the head, you're asphyxiating.
Right, so you only have to overcome what, like the HP in that area or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked pretty cool. Yeah, I was adding the back end stuff that would just come up in a table roll that was from the BRP to my Call of Cthulhu tables, like the effects from wounds on different areas that they had listed in there, because I was kind of struggling a little bit with what a major wound means, like how much discretion the keeper has. It may mean the character. So I think if I codify it like it is in the BRP, I think they added a luck roll during the healing process that if you fail, you it's like a permanent effect, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got rules for like what the permanent damage is. But it's in this one, it's like if it's a serious wound.
Right. Yeah.
Which is any wound that's like
half or more
in a single wound of your max hit points.
But I was, I'd start out with like a really severe description of it in your guys' case. And then I'd reel it back a little bit because you wouldn't fail or fumble on the healing checks, which I think is where the injury would become more permanent, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's some wiggle room with some of the stuff that you hit us with, like Brandon's melted hand. A melted hand sounds serious and it would look really, really serious, but, you know, once it settled, there's a chance that it might not be that bad.
Well, that is the true difference between the initial look of an injury and then after it's been treated, because even back then there could be some of those World War I type injuries were pretty rough, and the guy would come out, he could go in public, right?
Yeah, what was it, that Boardwalk Empire with the guy that had the bullet wound in the face?
Mask that he had to wear.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Rob, you are going to slip those brass knuckles on, but you can see at least the first guy, the two behind him, you can't see, but the first guy does have a shotgun.
Well, I got to get him before he can do anything with that.
Like a double barrel shotgun. And so let me get...
Yeah, this is one of those things that you walk into, you might not walk away from. So my only option here is to take that shotgun out of that guy's hands.
Yeah, it's just a shotgun. I'll be safe as long as he hits me in the head.
Nothing up here but a couple of pellets anyways. A few more probably do me some good.
Skull's too hard. It just goes right off.
That'd be an awesome ability.
Just like...
Ricochet shots off your head.
Just like that one fight back in 02. I kept slipping those punches. 02, what would you have been? You would have been like 18 years younger?
So 20.
Okay, that's about right.
That would have been my heyday, those 10 years.
That was the day I ever tell you guys. Basically, I'm picturing you as like a Stallone reacher.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
So none of the gun expertise. It's yeah. just boxing.
Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, so he's carrying a double barrel shotgun.
Yeah, well, I didn't see that when I came through the doors, so I'm going to, if I can, jolt right at him and grab that shotgun out of his hand.
Yeah, you see it now, and let me put it on your turn here.
You know, if you worry about your rights, those are about to become illegal unjustly.
So, yeah, so it is your move, and you want to try and go take that away from him?
Yeah, so this would be a combat maneuver.
Yeah, so...
Or fighting maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
My size is one.
Mm.
Build is one, I mean.
So you have no arms or legs?
I'm just my teeth.
And you can't see or
hear. That would sand roll them if I came through those doors just on my nubs.
One of the first scary like school stories that I heard was the, I think it was the Kerplunk Man. It was a crazy cannibal who escaped an insane asylum after eating off his own arms or legs, and that's what you'd hear is him rolling Kerplunk. After you.
That's pretty effective. I like that.
Dude, it scared me. I was like 5 or 6 when I heard that. Mm-mm.
Do you have any penalties for this one, Brandon?
All right, so your build is 1.
Yes.
His is 0, so then he gets a penalty, right?
Mm.
Yeah, so okay. He'll get a penalty.
I'll roll mine out.
So it'd be the same as a regular fighting attack. Use the brawling.
I got an extreme success.
Okay, so he'll try to dodge, stop you from grabbing a hold of that shotgun there.
If this was one of my Japanese animes, old Robbie would look a whole lot bigger as he suddenly rushes forward.
And he failed.
Yeah, so I'll just snag it out of his hands.
This is dangerous. The kids in the house.
Yeah. So yeah, your successful maneuver allows you to disarm the opponent, rest the shotgun out of his hand there.
Yeah. I guess I'll just hold on to it for now. Just grabbed it by the stock. Took it away from him.
Give me that.
Yeah. And I'll be prepping up with my brass knuckle hand to give him a good cross here.
Okay.
I like the idea that you were like kind of maybe taken slightly aback by the violence of the gun, like the shootouts, but you're going to smear this guy all over the place with a set of brass knuckles.
I don't like using them, though, but this is a matter of life and death.
You have any idea how hard it is to get face off of your brass knuckles? It gets in there. That's why I use OxyClean. Bam.
Okay, so when you get up to the guy and you snatch that shotgun, you can see that the other two behind him, you're close enough to them now to see that they're also armed. Both of them seem to have little revolvers. As it is right now in the small space, like they don't have a clear shot at you at this exact moment. But Oscar, that brings us to you.
All right, I'll try the front door.
Yeah, so it's open.
Oh, I'll go on in and draw my gun.
So when you open that door, you can see straight ahead light coming in underneath a door at the other side of the house. And that's where you can hear all the action taking place back there.
All right. I think I don't know if there's guns there, but I know that these guys seem to have a penchant for spraying and praying. So I'll kind of get low and start making my way that way, you know, like hunker down.
Okay.
Or what's it called? The crouch walk.
Yeah. Okay. And then Tony.
All right. So I was coming around the back.
And, yeah. So you'd have to hop over the short fence to get into the backyard.
No. Climb check, John.
And you can see the back door there and the light spilling out of it. But from your angle, you don't yet see any people. You'd have to hop that fence first.
Okay. Is which you want to jump
or climb,
or is there a gate?
No, there's not a gate on this side of it. So, yeah, you just let's see, what is it?
If he takes his time and isn't hurrying, he might be able to do it. Just unless the fence is like super high.
No, you can. It just slows you down.
Mm. Okay, so but yeah, it's short, I'll go it's short over the fence and then start making my way. Is at this point, I'll try to be a bit quiet as to try and sneak up.
Okay. So you hop that fence and you start moving towards that open door there where the light's spilling out, and you can hear someone shouting, "You should have minded your own business." And then back to you, back to these guys. So Rob, you had snatched this shotgun out of this guy's hand, and so he just is going to take a swing at you.
Okay.
He's going to do a brawl at you.
Yeah, I'll just try to duck it. Hopefully I can see it coming from a mile away. Oh, man. We'll see how he does before I have to spend luck.
You were taken aback by how quickly you're just yanked the gun out of his hand.
Only works that way in the pulps.
Yeah, so he failed, and you were trying to dodge?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was just I didn't read it right, but he didn't throw a good punch either.
Mm-hmm.
Give me back my shotgun. No fair.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, he takes a swing at you, but misses entirely. Then the guy behind him, he, like, steps forward with his hand outstretched with this revolver to get a shot off at you.
Some taxi driver gunfights right here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is also the one that said that you should have minded your own business.
Me and Tony going to walk in, and you're going to be sitting in a corner. Vagrant hero saves mother and child.
Yes, I would think this situation probably is starting to make me lose my cool a little bit. So I'll probably just say something ridiculous like, they got a kid in the house. What are you thinking about? Or something like that,
Yeah.
That ain't right, and I'll be getting... My face is starting to turn purple, that sort of thing.
Yeah, like I'm kind of, like Oscar's kind of nervous about starting a gunfight in here.
Yeah.
That's it. They should have headed towards their... What they most likely have for a bathtub, which is most likely a cast iron, like thick tub. Get in that, be fine. Well, better than not, I guess.
All right, yeah. So because of the, close quarters and having to reach around his friend there with this pistol, he's going to have a hard time, but we'll...
If he fumbles, does the cylinder gap take out his friend's eye? It's how you get big boss,
All right. And so what are you doing, Rob?
Nothing. I was planning on maybe pushing this one guy over into his friend, seeing if they go down on a tangle in the next round, but I don't think I'm going to try to hit the deck and give up my next action.
Okay.
I'm just going to have to literally eat a bullet here and keep moving forward. No matter how hard you can hit.
the angle of it was sort of off, and it just... Now I got this weird pot in my hair.
All right, let me look up something here.
I think I can take a 38 round.
I can definitely take a 32.
You can get up to a 45, it gets a little iffy.
There was a guy I fought. He punched, it was at least a 45. Didn't break the sound barrier, but man, bam!
All right, so he's...
He exhausted himself in the third round.
Yeah, okay. He's got cover and concealment, which is a penalty die. But he's also firing into melee. All right, so he'll need two. Okay, so let me do this again here. All right, so handgun fires at you. A fumble means he hits his ally, but he doesn't fumble.
Okay,
wait, sorry, that's wrong.
As an aside, Brandon, I have to tell you how nerve-wracking the... Tommy gun shoot up the restaurant thing was, because when I was listening to it again and when it was being played, you'd be like, an Oscars hit. But then you'd reel it back. But it was like that in all the rounds where you're like, gotcha, Rob. And they're like, wait.
Yeah, I keep hitting the wrong little buttons
when
you're supposed to add a penalty.
No, I do that stuff a lot too. It's just kind of funny because I'm like, please don't get shot.
Well, if there's precedent, I'm going to start doing it too. Yeah, that was really nerve-wracking, especially because I think just right before that, you were telling us about
how damaging the
McCracken with his like full auto machine gun was doing like 60 points of damage. It's like, yeah. I got 60 hit points.
All right, so he does miss, but he doesn't miss bad enough to hit his own ally there.
Okay.
So where's this round heading off at?
Yeah, so this round will go through the wall into the stairwell, which, you know, you can see the wood splinter. You can hear screams from upstairs. But, you know, it's just right through that door into the where they're doing their fight there.
Looks like they're letting me off the leash.
And then this third guy, he's at this moment, he climbs up onto the counter. It's the only way that he can try to get around to come at you from the other side. So he's climbing up on the counter, crawling towards the sink. Then it'll be your turn, Rob.
Yeah, so I'll be, you can't be doing this. They got a kid in the house. And I'll rush forward and hit that first guy. Center of gravity and try to knock him back into the next two guys. So I guess this is another fighting maneuver.
Okay.
Any different modifiers in the last roll?
No.
Should have just seen if you could have fisted the North Star at his head with them brass knuckles of yours.
Got a hard success this time.
Yeah, so he'll try to counterattack you and take a swing. We'll see. But he fumbled.
Nice.
Fumbled his punch, so. Okay. So, yeah, you're successful then. So you hit him real good center mass and send him reeling back into the one guy behind him. The other one's up on the counter now. So
yeah, and that's who I'll be turning my baleful gaze at next.
Okay. So, yeah, they both. Yeah, they. Let's see. Where is it? There it is. So, amazingly, the first one that you actually pushed, he manages to keep his feet. Due to having a backstop of his friend there. His friend does not, though. His friend falls down straight on his back. When that happens, Tony, you actually see his head now sticking out of the back door. But Oscar, it's your turn.
All right. So that kitchen door is closed, or is it like bat wings?
It's a swinging door.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, I'll go through it with my gun ready.
Yeah, so you open that door. And that's the sight that you see in front of you. You see off to your right towards the back door, there's a guy on the floor. There's another guy standing up in a fight with Rob, who's holding a shotgun in one hand and brass knuckles on the other. And there's a guy crawling along the counter.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know where Tony is, but I know he's probably off that direction-ish.
Yeah.
Right? You back would, to the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to shoot rounds through the house.
Right.
So I'll rush the guy that's on the counter, and I'll just start trying to club him, do some good old pistol whips.
Okay.
So unarmed or brawl here.
And that would be number three you're aiming for.
Oh, I can't see him on the tracker.
Yeah, let me. There we go.
So Ray?
Yeah.
There we go.
All right.
Okay, regular.
Yeah, so he'll try to fight back, but he failed. So go ahead and do your brawl damage there. All right.
And, if I see he has a gun, I'll tell him to drop it while beating him up.
Yeah, he does. He's got a revolver and he's crawling along the counter there.
So yeah, drop it if you want to keep breathing.
Okay. And then Tony, that brings us to you.
All right. So you said I see somebody's head coming back out through that doorway?
Yeah, somebody laying on the ground and his head just peeks out that back door as you come around to get full view of what's going on inside there. So, you know, a couple more steps now. You see him laying on the ground. You can see the back of another hooded man, and he's engaged against Rob right now.
Run up and soccer kick that head.
Is that guy on the ground look like he's still mobile?
Oh, yeah.
Awake?
Yeah, he's okay. Scrambling, trying to get up.
So, go up and attack him. Tell him that if he wants, it almost mirror what, I guess what Oscar's probably saying in there is that, you know, if you want to get out of this alive, fella, you better quit fighting and then,
quit resisting.
Come down with like I don't know if I want to do a kick to the head. Seems like a bit, well,
you might be able to
1920s. Come on.
I was going to say you might be able to just hold him at gunpoint, maybe persuade or intimidate him into not wanting to act, whatever your strengths are.
Yeah, because I'm also thinking that I'm probably not in the best fighting shape right now. So yeah, I'll pull that Colt pistol out and just point it at him, tell him better stay down, and I'll use intimidate to try and get him to do what I want him to.
Okay.
It's a hard intimidate. Nice. Success.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you step up and you point this gun at him. He's looking up at you. With wide eyes, but you can tell also right away that he's like not entirely with it. You know, the look you've seen on some of the other people you've dealt with here, like they're slow, but his eyes are wide in shock as he sees you there with the gun pointed at him.
Tell him even stupid understands a bullet. Don't try it, fella.
Okay. Okay. So this guy, Rob, this one you've been fighting who kept his feet, he's going to try and take his shotgun back away from you.
Well, that was a mistake, buddy.
Yeah, I will.
So he's trying to maneuver on you, so he'll get a penalty.
I'm just going to try to dodge it, though, just to hold it out of his reach.
Okay.
You know? Not rolling good on these dodges, though.
It's okay. He fumbled. So what happens when you fumble?
What, an attack?
Yeah.
It's sometimes they tell you, you know, like if you're shooting in the melee.
Yeah.
But yeah, the general rule for a fumble is to increase the horror, right? So
yeah,
it would be a horrific outcome. So
trips and falls, hits a corner,
yeah, something like that. Or yeah, I don't know, could be that in the struggle he does get his hands on it and
it goes
I
off.
Hit the trigger, something like that, right? You know, that's you have a lot of license with it. That's been my read of it anyway.
I like that. So he goes to reach for that shotgun, but he trips and falls, and he impales his head on the pile of wood there for the stove.
Mm. Oh, like a splinter.
Well, it's a good size one. I mean, it definitely goes right into his brain, through his eyes.
He's still kicking?
And so he's all twitching and stuff, but he's out of the fight.
I'm like, oh, dang. I didn't mean to take it that far.
Yeah, if the gun had gone off, I was going to start saying what you were saying to them, to you. Right. Jesus, Rob, there's a kid in this house.
Sometimes I get a little curious. That's what we'll all be saying. What, Tony, don't you go a little wacko too? I know Oscar can't stop killing. I can lose my temper.
I've stopped killing.
I just don't like
to I don't.
Stop
killing. didn't necessarily say I go a little wacko. It just doesn't bother me as much.
Oh.
Some people, they're just begging for it.
Seems like a good time to quote from the Sermon on the Mount, though. Like, I can't remove that splinter from your eye until I get the plank out of my own.
Mm. I wish I could help you, buddy, but we all got our problems.
Okay, so this one that you're pointing the gun at, Tony, and he's got his eyes wide, he doesn't move. He does what you say. He's like, he's still got a revolver in his hand, but he doesn't move to point it at you or anything. And he's holding very still. Oscar, that one who's on the counter that you clubbed.
Three.
Uh-huh. Yeah, three. Okay. So he's still got some fight in him. So he's going to try and shoot you with his revolver there.
Am I close enough to brawl the revolver hand instead of try to dodge?
Okay. Yep. Yeah, you can fight back and try to.
Good roll. One luck to make it extreme.
Oh. Well, I guess I'll wait and see.
Yeah. So if you pre-spend it, he'd just roll a critical or something.
Yeah. Dude, I was rolling so many ones, testing stuff.
Oh, yeah. I brought old Charles Stanton over for testing, and I like to roll 98s and 89s with him.
Yeah, it adds to the cinematic effect. Meanwhile, I like to roll. Was it like impaling damage all right. the time? Especially if good. I'm shooting at a child. I forgot his voice, so he's going to have a slightly different accent, I think, unfortunately.
All right, so he got a regular success.
All right. So can I smack this gun to a safe, what I would deem as a safe direction?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll say you do that. He points it at you to fire, and you knock it to the side, and some bullet goes flying through the other wall there towards the stove. And then, Rob, your turn.
Yeah, so I'll pull that guy on the counter down, right? Let's grab his firing arm, because he's pointing it at Oscar.
Yeah.
So I'll just grab at the elbow, and because he's got to be up to precariously, I imagine.
Yeah.
Just pull him down to the ground.
Okay.
Hard. Yeah, hard success.
All right. So yeah, you grab him and yank him down, and he falls onto the floor and drops that revolver. And then Oscar, your turn.
I'll give some kicks to the guy that Robbie just pulled to the ground.
Okay.
So what is that, bonus die?
Yeah.
One bonus die, 40.
Okay, go ahead and roll damage.
Oh, one.
Yeah, so you give him a good kick in the ribs. He can hear the air leave his lungs.
Yeah. Say it wasn't as good as it could be. Like the kitchen's kind of cramped and can't get a good... Oh, does he know I can click this button and now I'm a car?
All right, and then Tony, that's to you. So that guy on the ground that you've been pointing the gun at, he hasn't moved. He's just looking up at you with wide, surprised eyes. And inside you can see that they've brought that other one to the ground. Just past this one that you're pointing a gun at is another one who's laying down with his head at an odd angle and a piece of wood sticking through it. And his feet are twitching like crazy, but...
Is his other eye just staring sightlessly at the ceiling while he's agonal breathing?
Basically.
Yeah. Staring at Tony.
Right.
Well, this guy's doing exactly what I asked him to, so I'll just... I'll keep... Yeah, you just like you talk to a frightened horse. All right? It's like, that's right, fella. Just
nice you just and
keep,
easy.
Yeah, keep looking at me. Keep staying still, and you'll keep breathing.
Did you disarm him yet?
Now that I see that you guys got it taken care of, as I was gonna have you, one of you guys come and grab his sidearm there.
All right.
Probably, Oscar, if you're looking at me, I look like I'm about to start wailing on this guy we pulled to the ground. My face is two shades redder than normal.
Okay. Yeah, so basically the fight's over. So you got this guy on the ground.
All right. Good job, Robbie. And I'll walk over to, or call out, you all right, Tony?
You want to come grab this fella's shooting irons?
I'll look at Robbie, you know, you got this guy? Think you can handle him?
Yeah.
Yeah, boss.
Yeah,
well, I'm like,
yeah, I'll kind of snap out of it for a minute, and I'm like, yeah, I got him.
All right. Yeah, I'll go over, and I'll grab the guy's revolver.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so you snatch up that revolver. That other guy's just bleeding out onto the floor now, but he's clearly dead. And so now you've got the two that are just, you know.
Right.
They're not fighting. We'll put it that way.
Don't know if we should put the question to him here.
Nah, I don't think so, but...
I don't think we should leave a corpse for the missus.
Yeah, let me go check on her real quick. I just told her to go hide somewhere.
All right.
Gotta make sure none of them bullets... You know, the way houses were built back in here, too, it's not the same construction, right?
Also, hardwoods. Asbestos is everywhere. Probably now it's the real danger.
Yeah, so I'll leave them to keep an eye on things, and I'll go... track down the family.
Yeah, so when you leave the kitchen and turn towards the stairs, you can see Marianne standing at the top of the stairs with a shotgun.
Oh, nice. And brawl it out of her hands. No shotguns.
She's pointing it down in your direction, but and you know, she's obviously frightened, but she's like, what's going on?
It's all right, Miss Ellis, we got them.
Who are they?
I don't know.
Well, we need to call the police.
Those people you were talking about. No, the police are no good. We can't do that. That's the other thing I came to talk to you about. You got a place you can go? A relative in a different town? Anything like that?
No.
Well.
I have no one else.
I reckon there's going to be a whole lot more trouble than what happened right here coming up in the future. And, you know, maybe my friends have some ideas, but I think we got to get you out of here for now. There's nobody else you can think of?
Nope.
Is there a...
My husband died. There's no one else.
Dude, the train ran right into this town, right?
Yeah.
Does it run out at this time or?
Not the type that takes people.
Right. she'd have to wait for tomorrow.
Show her how to tie one of them hobo travel bags. And
right, and off you go. Just don't mind the other weirdos.
There's a church, like, what, 10 miles out this way.
That was the next idea,
and
was
start
to give her my cash, put her up for the night, and then her and the kid can head out of town.
Yeah, she said there's nobody, nowhere she could go since everybody she knew started acting strange recently.
Well, I think you're going to have to leave Mrs.
Put her
Ellis.
Up at that abandoned house that we were using for our
hideout. That isn't exactly
when we came
safe
back
for...
in.
I think it's maybe better than here.
But for the night, at least.
You got maybe 2 or 3 minutes, Mrs. Ellis. Why don't you go grab a couple of things, and then we're going to put you up somewhere, and I'm going to give you some money, and that way you can buy a train ticket, and you just go to any church when you get to a town, and you tell them you need shelter. I'm sure they'll take you in. As long as it's Protestant, you know. I can't speak for the Catholics.
Because you can set her up with a vehicle if we make a stop
at... 2 or 3 minutes, Miss Ellis. You got to go quick.
Okay.
Somebody sent these guys.
All right, so she turns around, and you can hear her run around yelling for Rosemary to, get up and get dressed and stuff. So you can hear all that commotion up there. But down in the kitchen, the two living intruders there, they're not saying or doing anything. So what would you guys like to do?
Well, I don't know if we still have any more of them handcuffs or not, but if we don't, maybe we should get some rope, secure these fellas.
I don't think we quite got time for that just right now, Tony. Just in case, drag this corpse outside. I don't think they'll be coming into the kitchen, but they don't need to see it. I think we might just head over to Petunia?
Yeah, it was next door.
We might just head over to Petunia's to get any questioning done there, figure out what we should do with these two, so they can just lay on the floor for now.
Yeah, when make it back in there.
I can cover them if you...
I want you to carry the body out. I'll cover them. I don't trust you with guns, really.
it was just that
Whitmire's
one incident.
Did you shoot badly in this one?
Yeah.
Well, I missed a bunch of times. I didn't shoot somebody else, but
yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not that it's not that I think you're going to shoot me on accident. Even it's just that I don't trust your aim.
Yeah, I'll
trained like you.
Start dragging the body out then.
Yeah, when I make it back into that little kitchenette, I'll be like, "Well, I probably could have bet some money on it turning out this way. Sorry to drag you guys into some trouble, Mr. Herman."
No problem, Robbie. We need to kill some time for the midnight mass anyway. I'm thinking about dragging these two over to Petunia's, putting a question to them.
Okay.
If you want to get that lady of yours out of here, take the car. Got till midnight.
Okay. Yeah, I think I was just going to put her up in that house and have her hit the trains tomorrow.
All right.
I'll be back shortly.
All right, you two. On your feet, walk slow. If you twitch wrong, I'll start putting rounds in you.
All right, so they stand up, and they got their hands up, and they follow your instructions. So,
yeah, I'll take them over to Petunia's, tell them to sit down, stay quiet.
Okay.
I think I'll yell at Tony to bring the corpse that way, too. You know, bring the baggage this way.
Okay.
And
so you, Rob, you want to get Marianne and...
Yeah, after I talk to Oscar, I figure they'll have had their couple of minutes, so I'll start hustling them up and taking a precaution not to lead them out through the kitchen or through where they'll be dragging that corpse or taking the other guys to Mr. Herman's car where I'm going to go.
It's still probably idling in the street.
Take him to the house.
Well, you know, no trains are going to be leaving, but the train station is open.
Yeah, I mean,
for people to wait for a train. That's what Rosemary says. What Marianne says.
If that's what you want to do, Mrs. Ellis, you think it'll be... I don't know. This town's got me all messed up. You know, everything looks the wrong way to me. And it doesn't seem safe to be out in the open. But if you think you'll be okay there, I mean, I guess they got no reason to think you're up to anything there. They might now have a reason if somebody was watching what was going on here.
Well, I mean, whatever you think is best, I don't even know where we would go.
Well, we're squatting in a house, an empty house at the edge of town. Okay. Nobody's in it right now. You know, it's not strictly legal, just so you know. But I think it might be okay for a night if you'd feel more comfortable there. But I can also take you to the train station. No. And I'll be reaching into my pocket where I have, probably like inside my jacket pocket, where I have my my worldly
Your
wealth.
Trusty reviver.
My $26 in cash.
Okay.
And I'll be giving that to her. And it's probably in, you know, like a collection of different types of change and and bills. And it's not much, but I think it should last you hopefully till the trouble is over. And another thing, Mrs. Ellis, if you ever see me again, which I hope you do, but if I'm talking anyway about a great eye or the terror in the sky, you just turn and go the other way. You got it?
I understand. I'll do exactly as you say. But no, she does protest and say that it seems like they would be safer if they just stayed with you.
I'm not going anywhere safe, Miss Ellis.
Going back to the old days.
The blood for blood days.
Okay. So yeah, she'll hustle her daughter with her and what, into the car?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rosemary and Marianne, they'll get into the car there. Rosemary is like almost immediately falls asleep despite the excitement. But Marianne, you know, she's looking around with a worried expression on her face. And then you were taking the other two live ones over to Brizendine's boarding house there.
Yeah. And I'll have them sit down and I'll kind of keep a half eye on them, but I'll be watching, seeing if anyone comes creeping, seeing if the dirty work's done.
Okay. All right. And so, Rob, you're going to drive them to that house?
Yeah.
Okay. And then are you going to come back here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll leave them the shotgun I recently liberated.
Okay.
If she didn't bring hers.
Yeah, no, she didn't.
It's travel size.
And I'll say there's like a big closet here in the house. Might be the best place for you, so you don't have to watch at a lot of different angles. I'm paying special attention because now I'm a little paranoid about being attacked there, even though I kind of thought that might happen if we went back there.
Yeah.
It's really like brought it home for me. So
they got eyes everywhere.
Yeah. I'll be paying special attention when we're driving away. And, when we get to that house, if anything looks off to me, there might be a change of plans.
Okay. Yeah. Do a spot hit.
Hard success.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So yeah, despite, I mean, you're paying special attention to everything as you go and keep an alert, but you don't see anything that stands out of place to you.
Okay. Well, I don't think they know about it yet. So yeah, I think you'll be okay here for the night and I'll come by in the morning. But if I don't, you're going to have to go down to the train station on your own.
Okay. So yeah, she nods, you know, you can tell she's scared, but she's, you know, she's strong. So, you know, she keeps her shoulders squared and tells you to be careful.
And I'll take the two of you out to that dinner we were talking about the other day when this is all over.
Maybe in a different town.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't trust the meat here.
I ate a bunch of it.
Oscar still won't tell me what he meant about this Wendigo. I don't know about that stuff, though.
All right, now what did you guys want to do while he's gone? You got these two prisoners.
Start asking some questions, right?
Yeah, I figure. I think I'll warn Tony to, you know, try not to get too loud in case people come creeping. But, you know, yeah, I think we're going to ask some questions. I think we kind of already know what to expect, but it still needs to kind of happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly what happens. Like, you know, you start asking them questions, but it pretty quickly becomes apparent that they don't have the mental capacity to really provide any information. I mean, there is some mumbling about the great eye or the eye in the sky. After that, you know, basically they just go back to drooling and swaying slightly back and forth. So you're not able to really get much information from them. I mean, they have IDs that ID them as, you know, Ray McLaughlin and Lewis Harrington, or I mean, Harry Wilson, but that doesn't really tell you much. So you're not really able to get much information out of them.
Mm-hmm. Any suspicious cars or people go walking by outside, though?
Do a spot hidden. Yeah, so you're looking out front at some point, and you don't see any suspicious people or cars go by. You do catch a flash that seems out of place at this time of night, way up on the cliff behind the recreation ground.
Up like, where that professor is supposed to be.
Well,
that direction or this?
That's the same elevation, but the professor's home is quite a distance away still.
Okay.
But up, you know, on the top of that cliff that's at the back of the recreation ground, you can see some lights, like work lights or whatever, like headlights moving around up there.
Mm.
But that's quite a ways off. So.
Looks like they got some people working this late at night, Tony.
So when you say that, it does sort of like cause one of the prisoners to gives him like a jolt and he laughs and he. He gives a jolt and then he laughs when you mention that. And he talks about Mr. Massey. He says, Mr. Massey's got a gold mine. Mr. Massey digs up gold. Mr. Massey digs up gold from the gold mine. But the gold's not mine. It's his. But that's pretty much all you get out of that.
I'll resist the urge to just put a round between his eyes and go back up to or out to watching for the road. Maybe check what time it is. See how long Rob might have before we got to start heading towards that church.
Yeah. So when Rob gets back after having dropped off the women folk, it's about 9:30.
This day seems to last forever.
Yeah. Things are happening pretty well. So actually say it's about 10 o'clock, right. 10 p.m. So by this time, like the two prisoners, they don't seem to even notice that they're there anymore. They're just sitting on the floor, wherever you've got them, just staring blankly and drooling. And so after you had seen it before, you do see more flashes of lights up there on the top of that cliff because it's an especially clear night, but you don't spot anything else on the street. So, Rob, you're driving back to the Brizendine boarding house there. So I'll have you do a spot hidden. As you pull out of the house down Cannery Road, take a right, and you're heading back into town. And
sort of got to get my car totaled.
I'm not in the same town anymore.
Oh, no. I accidentally crossed dimensions.
Yeah. So you'll get to Main Street, take a right, and then... That brings you back over towards Elmer's Steakhouse, and then you in that direction anyway. But you pass Bedford Street, High Street, and then you get onto the road that has the boarding house there. But you don't actually see any other traffic while you're out and about. So
yeah,
dude, that's a fumble. He's got to have some a sudden drive test because something darts out or something.
So you make it back to the Brizendine house there and pull up and, you know, without any event at all.
Yeah, lucky. It's going to come back to bite you, yeah. Man. Climb check.
Probably I missed the people spying the house or something.
Yeah.
Come back to a dead woman and her daughter. Yeah, so I'll park, I guess, across the street and walk to the boarding house.
Okay. Because
I knew that's where they were going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I still am keeping my head on a swivel as best I can, but I guess at this point, adrenaline's kind of dropped a bit and
yeah,
okay. Getting tired,
getting a little sloppy. Been a long day.
All right. So yeah, Rob enters the home and then you can see, they got the prisoners in there and they're not doing anything. So what would you guys like to do now? You've got a couple hours before the midnight mass.
Did you get anything out of them?
Not really. Same old babble. Ah, but we did get that old Mr. Massey mines the gold from his gold mine. But the gold's not mine. It's his. I'll point up to the lights. Seems to be burning the midnight oil.
That's up where the professor lives, huh?
It's like the same elevation and right. It's the same direction.
It's a rich folk area.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mrs. Ellis mentioned that professor again. I think it looks like you got two groups of people, some that are just scared of this great eye and some like these sorts here.
Well,
I mean, Mrs. Ellis had heard about it, but she was just terrified, you know, because people would, what'd she say? You know, they'd intimidate her about it.
Mm, yeah, and I fear that we're probably starting to skate on thin ice. So yeah. I think, depending on how this midnight mass goes, we'll probably pay the professor a visit tonight, too. Maybe just get some answers out of him. But I would prefer it if we could get a little more information about the man. Don't like running in headlong.
What did you guys do with the dead body?
Yeah, he's somewhere in this house, probably. You know, probably just have...
Tony drug him over?
Yeah, Tony put him in a room.
Okay.
Now we got to figure out what we're going to do with these two.
Well, we either tie him up and leave him here, or we can... I'm sure we got enough time to drive out to Jensen's place and put him up with the sheriff and the other one.
How long is the Jensen?
Or the
ride?
Chief and the other one.
It was like an hour, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it'd be like an hour to go there and get back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only 10, right?
Yeah.
We do need to check on the sheriff and the Jensen boy that's out there. We ain't seen them all day. I do kind of worry, though. I think old Deputy Alexander's playing a good game here. That or... he's just damn lucky and I'm a damn fool. Maybe a little bit of both. All right. Get up, you two idiots. Going to Jensen's.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll grab one and hoist him up.
They stand up without resistance. One of them that you lift up, Rob, he stands up and then he looks over at your hand on his arm, but not in like the, I'm trying to intimidate you, but the just completely bemused. What is this? Hand on my arm. I've never seen. And then he like slowly, ever so slowly follows it all the way up your shoulder, then over to your face. And then he's like, and his eyes go wide and he screams. Like it's so loud, it shocks everybody, but he screams in terror and tries to jerk out of your grip there.
Yeah, I'll just squeeze down on him. Maybe clap him upside the face there. Keep it down now.
Well, that works. Yeah, that you can see the sense get knocked right into him, and he sharpens up a bit. He's like, "Oh, that's it," but he stops giving any resistance.
Probably would have been quieter. Just shoot him.
Yeah, I'm trying to formulate some sort of theory on what's going on with these types of guys, like how it's happening, but I just can't get a read on it.
Maybe some sort of eldritch lobotomy.
Yeah, maybe that's not. Not a bad way of thinking about it. But yeah, I'm kind of treating them like, you know, it's not all on them. So as long as I'm not mad, I'm not being too rough with them. So that was your standard, somebody got a little out of hand.
Yeah.
1920s. Sensible slap.
Didn't even go with the backhand.
Right.
Just one nice open hand. Nice and gentle.
Just a casual corporal punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then, you know, start pushing him towards the car. Just keep my hand on his neck the whole time or the back of his shirt, whatever I got a hold of. And I guess try to make good time.
Okay.
Once we get in the car.
All right. So you guys, are you all going?
Yeah.
I mean, might as well.
Part of me kind of wanted to hang about and keep an eye on the place, but.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think I will do that. All right. I'll hang out here, keep an eye, see if anyone happens by. It's been all quiet so far, though.
Yeah, that is odd that. Well, we'll be back as soon as we can, Mr. Herman.
All right. I'll take the shotgun out of the trunk and enough ammo to keep me happy.
All right.
Is that a twin bandolero?
Twin bandolero and like a as much as I can hold it between my teeth.
Okay, so let's have, so you guys hop in the car and you go to take these guys to the Jensen farm. Let's have a spy hidden from, well, all of you over the course of this. And then a drive from you, Rob.
Of course. We got an extreme success.
Got a regular success on the drive and I failed the spot hidden.
You fumbled it.
I didn't fumble.
Oh, I see. I'm looking up. Further.
That was the one before, yeah.
All right. So Oscar failed. Rob failed. Tony, extreme success. You drive. Okay. So you guys take these prisoners back to the Jensen farm. And while that's happening, Oscar stays at the prison dine house and keeps an eye out there. But nothing of any note happens at all. You're able to get these two new people out to the Jensen farm and get them tucked away. And because of your good driving, even in the darkness, you make good time, you know, so it's just a little after 11 when you make it back to the house.
Okay. We'll be sure to refresh their
Yeah.
food and water.
Okay. Yeah, so when you get to the Jensen farm, there's no indication that they've even done anything or, you know, had any thoughts. They're just still stuck in that staring blankly mode. So
it's almost like, you know, Mr. Spates, somebody told them to do something, and when they couldn't do it, they just don't know what else to do with themselves. It's like they got no thoughts of their own, but what do I know?
Yeah, so Oscar, it's just a little after 11 when they make it back.
All right.
You didn't see anything during that time, so.
I was wondering if I should push it. I was thinking I'm just getting tired and kind of stupid and jumpy. Is the penalty, you could kind of run with it from there. Or not the penalty, but the consequence. Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to push it, you can.
Okay. Swear to God, game. All right. That's a fail on the push.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, you know, they leave and, you know, it's pretty late at night. You know, lots happened today. So you're just keeping an eye out the windows, looking at things. And,
but yeah, I think we're basically running on a nap.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah. So what happens with you, like, is you've gone into like overdrive now. So you're pretty much jumping at everything. And, you know, anytime the wind blows and the trees move, you're jumping at that. So you're extremely hyped up by the time those guys get back. And, that's what we'll say for now. And so then you guys got about, I'd say 45 minutes before the midnight mass is where we're at now.
All right. Let's head on over there. See if we can get any sort of advantage, any sort of angles before we send you two in there.
Sounds good. Gotta be something.
Okay. So when you arrive, you can see that there's other vehicles there. But rather than being inside, there's about 20 people, mix of ages, of townsfolk, some couples, some single people, dressed for church. But rather than being outside, they're all gathered out in the parking lot where there's a bus. The Reverend is out there and he's, you know, going around talking to people. Everybody seems to be having a good time, having conversations, but they're standing out in the parking lot around a bus. And then it was Tony and Rob were going to go?
Yeah, they were invited by the minister.
Yeah. So, you know, you can approach them and then the Reverend will come shake your hand. I'm glad you made it. We'll be leaving in just a few minutes. So please take the time to introduce yourself to the others. This is a very exciting time.
I'll let Rob know that if you start to feel anything funny, get out of here. Try to go out and warn Oscar.
Yeah, okay. Just wish I knew what I was looking for.
That's all. Anything out of the ordinary. You're a God-fearing man, ain't you?
Yeah.
As well, if it don't sound right, then that's what we're looking for.
Okay.
I guess you got a point there, Mr. Spates. I guess, let's see what this is all about, huh?
You got them knuckles on you?
Yeah. Never leave home without them.
Punch our way out of here.
Keep me from breaking my hand.
All right. So, you know, when it gets closer to, well, actually, pretty soon after you arrive, they start shuffling people onto the bus. Say, we got to get a move on. And so please, if you'd get on the bus, then we'll head on out.
Yeah, I'll get on. I'll go ahead of Mr. Spates. I'm kind of getting into the chauffeur role again.
Okay. Yeah, so you guys then get on, file on the bus, and then, you know, nobody came up to, like, talk to you guys, but you do spot here and there some looks coming your way, a little bit snooty, and, you know, you recognize because you're not dressed for church, and so, you know, some of the more churchy people, you know, they look down their nose at you. Nobody comes to say anything to you about it. So then, Oscar, you watch everybody file onto this bus, and then, you know, the Reverend, he's standing there next to the driver and looking at everybody. He's like, I'm very excited. Praise the Lord. This is a good time. I'm glad everybody could be here. We're just going to take a short drive to something that I think will have a dramatic impact on all of our walks with Christ. I know it has mine and many people that have gone here. So consider it a little field trip. So if everybody can stay seated, then we'll just head on out. And then, you know, bus fires up and the way they drive. So,
all right. I guess I'm at the car.
Yeah.
All right. So when they drive off, I'll start following. I'll turn the lights off and
okay.
maintain a safe distance.
All right. So the bus, you know, rattles along from the church, gets onto, you know, Main Street, and then continues on towards the west. You pass the hospital, and then you start going up a hill parallel to Mill Street. You know, it just starts gently rising as you're rising in elevation, and then you turn into the richer neighborhoods of Stowell here up on the cliff top there. You turn into there, you drive along a short way along beautifully manicured lawns with very upscale homes. This is where, you know, the people that own the cannery, the people that own the mill, the people that are, you know, just in general wealthy. And then finally, the bus comes to a gated property, and you wait for a moment while the gate opens. Or no, sorry. You pass a lot of properties that have gates. When you finally, you come to an area where there is a gate, but it's open. And so the bus just drives right on. There's nobody out there watching it or anything. It's just an open gate like they were expecting it. And at the end of this private drive that goes along a good distance of well-manicured grass and trees on either side, and then you come to a large house, a spectacular house, honestly. It's you can tell it's old. It's built in the style of the previous century, but it's very well kept up, and you know, it's got a massive fountain out front and all of the trappings of the wealthy. That's where the bus comes to a stop, alongside the front entrance to that home. And the reverend stands up and he's like, "We've made it to our destination." So if everyone who might not be aware, this is the home of Professor Hart. And Professor Hart is a genius, a wonderful man. And as it turns out, in his scientific investigations, he's come across some interesting things that lend a lot of weight to the what we all call our faith. And so I brought everyone here to listen to a short lecture from him. So please, everyone, follow me. Come on inside. There'll be snacks and drinks for everyone in there.
My weakness.
This
is exactly what we were on the lookout for. No church gives out food and drinks.
And so you were following him.
Yeah, I'd probably get out when it enters into the gated area and probably follow on foot.
Okay.
From there.
Okay.
I'll take with me the shotgun and my pistol.
Okay. All right. So as you approach the house, Oscar, it's an ideal situation. It's an ideal setup for you because all it's a massive house. And it seems like every light is on and there's lights out in the courtyard and a driveway. And so, you know, being back in the grass and the trees where you are, nobody's going to see you until you get right up on the grounds, you know, of the house itself. So you got a good view of everything. So you can see where the bus has stopped and the people have filed out. They've gone up the massive stone steps to the front door, which is like, you know, the front door, it's like a double door that's 20 feet tall, like way larger than a door needs to be. And so you watch them all file on into that house. And you can see from back where you're standing, you can see all of the serving folk types. Some of them are working in, you know, one wing of the house. You can see in their uniform what's obviously like the kitchens, and they're hustling about and bustling about. And you can see someone comes out to get the bus and move it to park it somewhere. And you can see all that going on. But
have I noticed any guards or guard animals?
No, not yet. You haven't noticed. Everybody that you see seems to be about something. They're generally dressed like the servants, and they're carrying this there or moving that there or whatever.
So. All right. So I guess I'll hunker down until most of the servants seem to disappear back inside and most of the guests have too.
Yeah.
Then I'll make my way over and start skulking about, seeing what I can find.
Okay. So the rest, so, you know, Oscar, or I mean, Tony and Rob, you go inside with everybody else. There's about 20 people there into this massive foyer. And it's got all the trappings that you would expect of a rich person's home, you know, statues and artwork and these beautiful carpets and these stairs that go up to the next level and massive portrait of somebody there. There's even tapestries, and in this large open area, there's like a little, like a platform set up, and the Reverend gets up there and bids everyone to gather around. And you can see a man back there behind the Reverend. You know, he's a, you would guess to be in about his mid fifties, and he's dressed in a very well tailored suit. He's got a pair of spectacles and some, and a wild hair. But he's standing there, and it's a match for the portrait, the giant portrait that you see in between the two staircases. So you can definitely tell that this is Professor Hart, the owner of the home. But the Reverend raises his hands and he says, listen, we've brought you here because in his scientific studies, Professor Hart has done what many thought was impossible and found physical proof of the existence of God. And that's what I've brought everyone here to show you. He's created a wondrous, fantastic telescope. And with this telescope, we're able to look on the very face of God. And I have done this myself, and so have many others. And it has provided us with exceptional capabilities far beyond what we would have ever thought possible. It's turned some people who were smart into exceptional geniuses. It's turned people who were particularly empathetic into even more empathetic, able to to even intuit the feelings of others, to help them through trauma. So that's what everyone has been brought here for. So if you all just wait your turn, this telescope doesn't work unless Professor Hart aligns it for each individual. So please help yourselves to the snacks. The serving folk that you see going here and there will provide you with anything you need while you eat, while you wait your turn, and get to know each other. It's a very exciting time. This is not something that, this is not an occasion afforded to very many. And I myself very excited to see how God touches each of you as you look upon his face for the first time human beings ever done so and lived to talk about it. So that's what he says. And then, you know, people start, like, you can see excited looks on people's face. They're like, oh my goodness, we're going to see the face of God, right? To you, Rob.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. You know, God's the original sand loss.
Yeah. Well, no, you, like I said, because you know the Bible.
Yeah.
Pretty well.
Didn't work out for most.
And, you know,
that's why they
people die. you know,
they had to partition up the temple,
yeah,
you know.
Right. So you know that. But you know, that's what's going on there. So,
well, right now I'm just thinking that they're just selling something. Like, this sounds like a pitch, right? But obviously there's more to it. So
yeah.
I've seen better snake oil salesmen.
It's like the one that's took my girlfriend.
But so at that point, some music starts playing, and you realize that there's like a large piano, and a person's playing a piano. Hmm. And serving people come out with trays, and they're passing out like snacks and whatnot. And the professor, like the first person has approached, you know, that the Reverend has selected, and then that person is talking with the professor, and they've got their heads down and, you know, shaking hands and whatever the person's saying. The professor obviously is excited to hear it, and he's shaking his head. And then he takes him back through some large double doors into another part of the house. And so that's what's happening there.
Yeah, I'll grab one of the offered snacks and sort of absentmindedly munch on it. I'll turn to Mr. Spates and say, like, I don't know, Mr. Spates, I don't like it. All this is not where I come from, you know. What are you making of it?
Well, I think that this is definitely what we were looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see how this is, regardless of what the what the Reverend says. I don't see how this is tied to God or anything holy. As my thought is that this is how they're putting the whatever it is they're doing on people. Was say we watch a couple and see if they look any different. I tell you, it's probably not in our best interest to take a look through that thing.
Yeah, I agree. All right. I guess we're already in pretty deep.
All right. So then, Oscar, you're still skulking about around the house there. And on the one wing, the east wing, you can see clearly through a lot of the windows where there's the kitchens and people are hustling about making their food and stuff. And around the back side, you see that there is a one young man out there having a smoke. So he's stepped out through one of the, back doors there. And, he's leaning back against the wall of the house and he's having a cigarette.
All right. Is there a servant door near there?
He's standing right next to it. It's the one came out of.
Is there any way to get closer to him without being spotted, or am I going to have to?
You think that because of the way that the lights are shining through the windows back there, you could probably get to within 10 feet of him before you'd be illuminated.
I want to try to do that. And my idea is to kind of hunker, wait for him to finish that smoke, and then maybe try to follow him in through the servant's door.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if this servant's door is opened or unlocked from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But if it isn't, that way I can kind of like get something in there and then kind of keep it open and get to follow him in. But if the opportunity presents itself, which I'm worried about, I might try to just choke him out.
Okay.
If maybe wear his clothes. I don't know. Go full solid snake here.
Okay.
So stealth?
Yeah.
You son of a.
Okay. So, you want to, you're standing back in the grass and the trees and you want to get closer. All of the ground around the house itself is like pea gravel.
Mm-hmm.
Looks beautiful. It's hard to be quiet on.
Yeah. Gonna make
you
noise.
Step out onto that. And you can hear it crunching underneath your feet. And this guy's, leaning back against the outside wall of the house, pretty close to the door he came out of, and he's having a cigarette. But let me.
My grandfather told me a couple things, and one of them is never to try to sneak on gravel.
All right. So he's leaning back against the wall there, and you can hear yourself pretty loudly, but he doesn't seem to react to the sound. There's a lot of noise coming out of the kitchens itself with all the people hustling and bustling, and there is still a good distance between you and him, so he doesn't react to your first steps out onto the gravel.
Because I'm so jumpy.
Yeah. And then Rob and Tony, the first person that went back with the professor, comes back now. And he steps out with the professor into the room. He's got a great big smile on his face. He looks exceptionally happy. And you can see him walk up to who you assume would be his wife. And he's, he's very excitedly reporting, some good news to her, as they embraced and jumping up, and he's being very animated and happy.
So do we see every part of the process, or is there do they go behind a partition?
Yeah, they go through some doors into another part of the house.
Hmm.
But the first person who came back does seem to be happy about what happened. So we'll have to stop there for today and pick it back up there next time we play.
All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Next time, I'll put a map together for the house so it's easier to explain what's going on.
This has been a Death Watch production. Thank you for listening.